Now, we want this thing to pulse. Let me get it up a little bit. Now it pulses on my voice. Well, you remember now where we were, right?
Well, we were talking about changing the rail in 1923 is what we were doing.
All right.
You know, about a week before they started changing the standard gauge to narrow gauge, they sent all the section men from all of the section houses east of Durango down to Farmington. And they took out and changed all of the sidetracks. There wasn't very many sidetracks because they were all built for just a very few cars. Seven, probably the longest one of them was at Aztec, was only 25 cars to start with.
Yeah.
And Farmington, of course, had 27 cars. Well, they changed all of those sidetracks so that they were all through. When the last train left Farmington, they hired all the farmers and everybody else, and they changed the rail right straight through.
One day. You mean they pulled up the rail right behind them?
Pulled up the rail right behind the train and moved it in. And the next day, after they did that, I was the conductor on the train. We had about 15 passenger cars, and Mr. Bowen, with his private car and his family, were on the rear end of it. We hauled all those section men back as far as Alamosa.
Uh-huh.
Unloaded a bunch of them at Antonita, and they took the train from there to Santa Cruz.
Was Mr. Bowen president of the company at
no,
the time?
No, he was the general superintendent.
General superintendent, yeah.
Well, okay. See, that was in 23. Yeah.
In 1923, yeah. Right, okay.
I think that Receiver Young, who was afterwards president, or first president and receiver, I think he's the one that brought Bowen and all those other gentlemen from the New York, or the Northern Pacific down here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then those policies were practically followed through when Pyatt came in 1924.
And that Pyatt is P-Y-E-T?
T.
T. P-Y-E-T-T, Pyatt.
I think it's Pyatt.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Well, anyway, we've got it down here.
Well, anyway, we've got his name, and anybody could look at the records and find out something that spells Pyatt.
Seem to have lost a book here. Oh, here it is, right here.
Okay.
That's it, right there. 1924 is P Y E A T T.
P-Y-E-A-T-T, okay,
yeah.
Pyatt. Okay.
J-S.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, that Farmington branch, we've already said, hauled mainly fruit because it was a big orchard country down there.
Yes. It wasn't until years later that, in fact, I don't think there was very few stock cars.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no refrigerators.
Mm-hmm.
So that there was, and there was not much business really, except the fruit in the fall.
Yes.
It wasn't until later years, after we had the narrow gauge, that really we started shipping beans out of Aztec.
Pinto beans. Yeah.
From over, raised over in the Bloomfield area.
In Bloomfield, yes.
Mm-hmm. So that the boxcar shipments of groceries and hardware materials, building materials, such as that, were all come in here and transferred then.
Went down on
went
that.
Went down mm-hmm. to Farmington.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I noticed in that one picture that was in the book, Cinders and Smoke here.
Yeah, showing Doris Osterwald's book, yes.
Yeah, well, this is the Burley picture.
Yeah.
Well, there's, I haven't looked at that picture again, and there's, it shows the three rail track there yet.
Oh, it does.
And there are two standard gauge boxcars there, one on either side of a flat car.
And where is that photo supposed to be, do you know?
It's in your collection up here.
Oh, it's in my collection.
According to the
I'll look for it and make a special note of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was a photo by Burley.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yes.
Uh-huh. Not Burley, but Blue.
Okay, Blue. Yeah, yeah. We've talked about him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think that, they say the early 1900s, but I don't think that ice house was built until 1910 or in that era.
You may be right. I don't know who told me early 1900s on that or how that got marked that way.
Yeah.
Somebody had that idea. And it might have been Arthur Wyatt who had that idea about that ice house and so on, but I'm not sure. But we can track it down.
Anyway, the Farmington wasn't built till 1905.
Can't be earlier than that.
No.
That's for sure.
No.
do you think, had that railroad done any good down in New Mexico and been able to extend itself, let's say, on down south of Farmington some way, do you think they would have hauled coal down that way and tied up with the Santa Fe down Gallup or someplace like that?
If they could have got into that, they might have eventually handled the coal and the timber business that are...
And the Santa Fe and the Denver would have made some kind of an agreement.
But there's other railroads, you see, the Wheel Road. You remember that was built out of Bernalillo? It come up as far as Cuba?
Yes, I know that.
Well, that was, I think the money was furnished by the Santa Fe and wanted to come in here to connect.
Wanted to come in here to connect. Mm-hmm. Through Bernalillo, yes, up through Cuba, yes. I know where some of those timbers are from a couple of the bridges that were on there. They're in that restaurant down in Albuquerque that's called the Hacienda, because Mr. Watson built that restaurant and he got his timbers, those great big timbers from bridges on that railroad between Cuba and Bernalillo.
Well, that was, they say that because the coal was very limited around Cuba, that's why they pulled it out. Wheel couldn't make any money on it.
I just
wondered about that. Often. To go into a place and run right up against the reservation line of the Utes, the Apaches, and the Navajos
and New Mexico.
And they wouldn't give them a right of way.
No.
So it stopped right there. That's another thing that they have no railroad south of here.
Yeah. that's part of that's a little bit strange because in the Navajo Treaty of 1868, they agreed not to obstruct the building of railroads on the reservation. But then there's reservation land, and then there's, and that's treaty land, and then there's executive order land, and the two in law have a little bit different status.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure of that.
Let's see. Okay, tell me about derailments, wrecks, anything else unusual that happened on that Farmington branch that you remember.
I can remember long before I went to work here where they had a heavy snow, and that blocked them from going to Farmington for 1 year. They had a hard time getting down through there on account of the ice on the track south of Durango here.
Yes.
They didn't have no snow plow, no flangers on the engine.
Yeah.
So it made it a pretty difficult job. They were several days getting through. And that also brings to mind all of the wash-ins that we've had to contend with over the years. So
wash-ins or wash-outs?
Both.
Both, huh?
Both. Yes. I was going into Farmington one day, and the floor... it's down below Flora Vista, Hood's Spur.
Yeah.
Well, that river was clear up in that, almost over the track in through there, and it had washed out a little bit of a bridge where irrigation ditch or drainage ditch.
Yeah.
And we had to shore up that bridge so we could get to farming. Little things like that. We pulled a million rocks off of the Bondad area that rolled down off of the hill there, big rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the hardest rainstorms I ever was in was right at just on the Florida River Bridge south. That washed that. The train was stuck there on the kind of a rock.
Yeah.
Before we could get out of there, or the as Jim McHolland was the conductor, he walked down to the section house to get the section crew to come back to blow the rock. It was too big.
Yeah.
And that train was butted in right up above the boxes on the trucks.
Yeah.
We had to have it all shoveled out before we could ever move the train.
Yeah. You didn't have a little thing that went ahead of the regular train?
No, we never used those. They only use that where they have no communications.
I see.
Motor car. That's where all the silver bridge. That's the only place you've ever used.
Weren't there no telegraph lines, anything
telegraph
like
lines,
that?
Yes.
But that was all?
Telegraph lines, that was all.
You can't get telegraph on the train?
You couldn't get it unless you had the equipment.
Yeah. And they didn't have the equipment.
We didn't have any equipment.
No. Yeah. Could you operate a telegraph key?
No, I tried it, but I never finished learning how to do the job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did you get this key that you donated to the Center of Southwest Studies here? It's out there in that case.
From old Regan, who was the lineman for the telegraph company.
If you'd put a battery on that, you could use that the next 5 minutes.
I had I typed a letter to a friend of mine in Chicago, a fellow that built the engine I showed you.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, he was, of course, his grandfather was a telegrapher on the V&O.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had used this same set, and I had the operator down here telegraph him a message.
Mm-hmm.
So he sent one back the same way.
Good.
On Good. Tape. This was on tape.
It's on tape, yeah. Yeah, I understand that. anything else besides the snow and the washouts and the wash-ins and things like that? Any trains just run amok between here and Farmington?
No, I don't believe there were. Mm-hmm. The grade wasn't sufficient to be running all wild.
Once you got past Bondage, you really had it made, didn't you?
Yeah.
As far as
grades. Going down,
yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you want to talk about your big trains we hauled during the pipe haul or not.
Yes, as long as we're on that Farmington branch, let's do it. Tell me about when the oil was discovered at Aneth and also at Hogback. I guess that's the main one.
Hogback was the main one.
Yes.
Because that started the hauling of oil that come out of Farmington. And for a while it went to Alamosa, and then they diverted it to the Rio Grande Southern, and they loaded it in standard gauge cars at Montrose.
At Montrose,
the mileage.
It went all the way up there.
Went all the way to Salt Lake.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was standard.
Okay. What other impact did that discovery of oil there at Hogback have on the Farmington branch?
They finally built a refinery at Farmington, and we supplied all the narrow gauge with gasoline from the Conoco refinery at Farmington.
Mm-hmm.
So that made a considerable increase in business over the years. Then after we were able to run narrow gauge, then the sheep trains out of there in the fall were probably 25, 28 cars of sheep on each train. That's what the engine would handle.
Yeah.
And we would have, for about 10 days, we'd have one every other day.
My goodness. And then the pipe that you brought in and all the oil field equipment.
Yes.
That was pretty enormous, wasn't it?
Oh, it was enormous. I had one train out of Carbon Junction of 85 cars.
Hey, how many engines did you have pulling this? One?
One engine.
85 cars.
85 cars.
Loaded with pipe?
Loaded with pipe.
Right.
And of course, we had an idler each between each car because the pipe extended out over the ends on each car.
Mm-hmm. What's an idler?
Well, idler is a flat car that it could be a coal car with the sides removed that we used in there to keep the pipe from clashing together.
Mm-hmm.
But can you imagine going to down to Farmington with a train of that type when there wasn't a sidetrack between the Carbon Junction? We started setting out cars at Bondad. We have 10 or 15, some at Posta, some at Cedar Hill. We still had too many cars for Aztec to get back because the main track there was full of cars.
And you say you could put 27 cars on a siding at Farmington?
Well, that was on the house track.
That's on the
house. That was before they extended it when the pipe race started.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
When they started, all the building mud come in. That is the mud for the wells.
Yes.
Drilling mud. Right. Then they had to have cars build more tracks. They had to have a special track where they unloaded all the pipe there.
Yeah.
That's just between Drango and Farmington up at the top of the hill. You remember up there where the light plant is where we had one long side track that would hold about 75 cars.
I see.
They had to put that in to exchange the loads with the empties.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure, you had to have some place
to... Had some ways to get around.
Get around, yeah. That was the... But that business was all gone by the time they abandoned that Farmington branch.
It wasn't all gone.
Why did they abandon that?
Well, for the first reason, the people wouldn't make a complaint to the PUC. Mm-hmm. They made a complaint to the railroad, so they would haul it down in trucks, the drilling mud.
Yes.
Well, the reason for that was that all of these mud companies were national companies with a manager. Mm-hmm. And the manager just wouldn't go along with the communities. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he didn't file any complaints, why, it was a sense that we were going to lose the railroad. Mm-hmm. Not enough other people would become involved.
Yeah, I see. So the railroad put in for abandonment, and they abandoned it.
And they abandoned it.
And they pulled the track up very quickly, didn't they?
Yeah. Took them 2 years. A year after I retired, they had it set that they could go. They had the abandonment in. That was the last hearing they had, and that was it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they would have pulled off the city. Silverton, except for the fact that when they got rid of the passenger business in 51, the stipulation was that as long as the passenger business increased on the Silverton, and as long as Silverton and Durango would protest any abandonment, why, that railroad would keep running.
Yes.
That's why it runs so many years without any other passenger business down here.
Right. So when they cut the Farmington branch off, though, there still was connection to Alamosa.
Well, they abandoned that same
and
time.
And then they abandoned that. Was it the year
the
after? The same time. Oh, I had an idea it was a year after.
No.
Okay.
You see, the winter, that was a hard winter. Mm-hmm. And they just wouldn't run any trains that winter.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't run any trains, then you have to run snow trains to open it up. Well,
yes.
They didn't want to do that, so they just hauled it down by motorway, and that was it.
Yeah.
Just closed up the railroad.
And again, more by default than anything else.
More by
you
default
say?
Than anything else.
Because people didn't protest that.
Yeah.
And they could have protested to the what? PUC.
And they didn't. PUC. It was in ICC when it generated the business in New Mexico, because it was interstate then.
All right. You think of anything else about the Farmington branch or in those years we're talking about right now that is significant as far as the railroad's concerned?
Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Okay, you think of anything else now on the Farmington branch before we leave that topic?
Well, one thing that I think we ought to remember is the amount of difficult switching that was on the Farmington branch due to the small sidetracks and the large trains.
Mm-hmm.
I know one problem that we had in Farmington. I was braking at the time, and we were an extra crew, in fact. And we went in there with the 10 oil tanks empty to trade for 10 loaded oil tanks.
Yes.
We had 10 empty stock cars to spot on the main line, and the stockyards was east of the main line, or east of the Y, let's say, on the main line.
Mm-hmm.
And we had 27 cars to go in on the house track. It was the only other track that was there at that time, outside of a little spur at the Farmington Lumber and Hardware. Well, to get around that, trade the empties out of the house track.
Yes.
For the loads that we had in the train.
Yeah.
Go down and get the 10 cars of oil, the 10 stock cars behind the coach that we had, and then leave town so we could spot those 10 stock cars at the stockyard.
Yeah.
Did a lot of maneuvering. I guess we took the engine around the Y there about three or four times before we could get out of it.
I would expect.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be hard.
Yeah,
that'd be hard. If they had a great big long track, that wouldn't have been so difficult.
Wouldn't have been so difficult.
Okay. Alvy, let's talk about the period now, 1925 to 1935. What stands out in your mind as far as the railroad's concerned?
Well, a continual improvement in equipment, roadway, bridges, including extending the side tracks, and we had new engines already ordered.
Tell me about those engines. What's the improvement?
The 470s come in 23.
All right.
But immediately by 1927, they had ordered the 480s.
And what's the difference between a 470 and a 480?
Well, the difference in the weight of the engine and the pull on the draw head. Mm-hmm. They can haul more cars.
Yeah. Just a bigger. Bigger engine.
Bigger
okay.
engine.
What other rolling stock?
Well, then they converted the 10 of those little 1000s they had on the standard gauge to the 490s.
All right. Mm-hmm. And that's better yet.
Yeah, that was better yet.
Yeah.
So that gave us 30 engines here to use here and on the over out of Salida. The
Salida was a division point.
It was a division point for there for the gunners.
Salida was also the place where you creosoted ties and timbers and all of this.
Yes.
Did you ever go in and out of Salida?
I made one trip over to Salida from Alamosa, and that was because of a transferman strike in Alamosa. And we had 30 cars of peaches to go east, and we had to get them to Salida so they could be moved in.
Sure, yeah.
And we had a train that took us an awful long time to get over there. We had too many cars for the power. We had to run 20 miles for water. Because they just exhausted their water.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was quite a trip.
What'd you do? Unhook, take the engine up,
take
come
the
back?
Take the engine
and then go up to the water and load it up again?
Come back, that's
yeah?
right.
Okay. Now, what about the roadbed? You mentioned the roadbed. What do you do to a roadbed when you
improve? Well, we had new ties, and then they started the ballast. On the laying ballast out of Durango, we had a gravel pit here. We had one at Pagosa Junction or Gatto.
Yeah, Gatto. And, where was the gravel pit here?
Right down at the end of 5th Street.
At the end of 5th Street, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or 5th Avenue, let's put
it. Yeah.
First Street and 5th Avenue would be about the place.
Down there on the other side of Basin Petroleum.
Well, that was the Conoco Petroleum down there on the railroad.
Yeah.
That was their bulk plant.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And what do? Just put better gravel and new ties and
get it up out of the
are the rails any heavier because of this heavier equipment?
Well, we did bring in 100 miles of new rail off of the, I think it was 200 miles of 70-pound rail they bought off of the Union Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And they put that in between Durango and Chama.
Yeah.
Some over on the other side of Cumbers, and I think some of it they used on the railroad out of Salida over there.
What had been used before? What pound rail?
We had the 65-pound was the heaviest we had at that time. That was usually on Cumbers.
Mm-hmm.
We had 52-pound between Durango and Chum at that time.
52-pound.
Uh-huh.
And that just wouldn't stand too much.
That wouldn't stand all that.
That heavy engine and all of that.
All the time, that's
okay.
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
What other improvements did they do?
Well, we had the coaches were improved, too.
Where were they improved? At Alamosa?
Well, they were improved at Alamosa, and that was from starting about 35. They got rid of quite a number of branch lines, and then they started improving the...
They brought coaches in and refurbished
them.
Did you do any of that because of your war experience?
No, I didn't.
No?
No, I didn't do any of that. But they had enough coaches to make three trains to Durango. You would have one each way.
All right, one day, going each way.
And one spare.
One spare, all right.
Mm-hmm. And then they had enough to do almost the same thing out of Salida to Gunnison.
Mm-hmm.
So that kept things going pretty good, having vestibule trained, what few passengers they were handling.
Yeah.
It was a great improvement to have steam-heated cars rather than stoves.
I would think so, yes.
They had better air brakes on
them. And that came in the 30s, right?
Yeah, 30s, About 37, they brought those trains out.
Yeah. And air brakes.
Well, better air brakes because they're...
Westinghouse.
I think all of it was Westinghouse, but they just put them out so they worked a little better.
Yeah.
Then we had air signals with the engine. You didn't have to wave out the window at him to get him to look around.
How did you...
Well, you had a rope.
Yeah, through the rope that goes down through the train?
Through the train, through to the engineer. Yeah. And then you could pull that way, it'd blow the air whistle in the engine cab.
Okay.
And it was more like a standard gauge trailer there. The
if you
better.
Pulled it three times, it meant something?
Stop at the next station.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if you pulled it once, what did it mean?
That was usually emergency stop.
Emergency, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You had a whole set of signals.
Oh, yes. If you were standing, of course, three meant back up.
Yeah.
Or two go ahead if you couldn't see the engineer and the likes of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. What else in the early 1930s do you remember? Oh, the Depression now. How'd that affect the road?
Well, the Depression affected the road quite a bit because it forced the railroad into receivership again.
Again.
Pyatt lost out because of the friction between the two... the bankers and the two railroads, the Western Pacific and the Missouri Pacific, who finally owned it. Well, fortunately, in this next receivership, they appointed Judge Sims. Now, it was a different kind of a setup, because he appointed the two receivers, one from the Salt Lake area, that was Judge McCarthy, and one from Denver, who was Henry Swan, a banker.
Uh-huh.
And they handled the railroad then, and...
You mentioned Judge Sims. Where was he?
He was in Denver.
In Denver.
Yeah, he was in Denver.
That would be the Federal District
that
Court
was the Federal
for Colorado.
District Court,
yeah. Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right.
And a lot of the policies then that were being formulated were being carried out by Al Perlman during this period of time. He was the general manager
of the road, of the
of
railroad.
The road.
Yes.
And that was eventually what they were trying to do. Was to cut the passenger train business out altogether.
Sure.
Because it wasn't paying off there too well. So around this time, the railroad started buying truck lines to move freight by truck, or a bus line so they could move the passengers by bus, if they like running to Farmington, or the mail. Take the mail off the train and move it by bus. Give it to the bus company.
Yes.
So that started the employees. We had a club then at that time. That's where this club business came in. Because we were trying to get business with the railroad.
Yeah, we talked about that
a
little bit.
About that.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had many ideas to boost the business. And one of the things, with Mr. Camp and myself on the Chamber of Commerce Transportation Committee, was the fact that we should find out just what they were doing through the federal court.
Yes.
So I made a trip, Bruce, W.L. Bruce, he was a brakeman, and myself made a trip to Denver, and we tried to find out from the records, the court records in Denver. We couldn't get to first base. The clerk of the court wouldn't let us have it, so I asked him if I could use the phone call Durango. I want to talk to Mr. Camp, because he was desirous of the information, as well as we were.
Sure.
Because after all, we were working on with the same people.
Yes.
And so the clerk said, well, he said, in that case, here it is. So then we found out just what their plans were. And we had then, at every hearing we went into, like in 1935, when they pulled the Pagosa Springs branch off, why, brought up, Perlman always brought up then, we're going to get rid of all this badger business.
Yes.
We're going to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
So watched that all the way through. That gave us an idea of what they were going to do.
You mentioned that Pagosa Springs branch. Now, that went from Pagosa Springs to Pagosa Junction.
Yes.
And that's why it was Pagosa Junction.
Uh-huh.
And what were you hauling on there, timber?
We hauled company ties.
Yeah.
And stock.
Yes.
All the supplies that went in on everything. till they finished the Wolf Creek Pass, and then, of course, they started trucking it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that,
and that's why that was abandoned more than anything.
That really was why it was abandoned.
And what you were getting out of there were mainly timbers and ties, timbers, things like that, for the railroad itself.
Yeah.
And livestock, sure.
Livestock, yes.
And that was about it. There wasn't much business in Pagosa Springs, was there?
No, it wasn't too much business in there.
No.
No.
Yeah.
The freight business actually didn't amount to a carload a week or a carload a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you'd take those ties, things like that, up to Salida.
They'd take them to Salida, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where was the sawmill? Where did you?
Well, we had a number of sawmills. Yamaguchi had one about 4 or 5 miles out of Pagosa Junction.
Which way? Toward Pagosa Springs?
Towards Pagosa
Springs. Yes, okay.
And then Pounds had one at Dyke.
All right.
And Bunch had one